Brethren, it's good to see all of you. When you look at the words that are going to come up on the screen eventually, there it is. So some of you may be familiar with this. We three kings of Orient are, bearing gifts we traverse afar, field and fountain, moor and mountain, following yonder star. Any of you remember that? I certainly do. I remember singing that in sixth grade as part of a presentation that we had on with the baby Jesus and the whole shebang there. So anyway, we had the star hanging up there and all of that. So we as the sixth graders were the choir. So we sang all these songs, and it was a big deal at the time, and there was nobody offended by what we did. So things have changed. But many of you may remember back to this song. I certainly remember it. And when I sang that song, I thought this is exactly a portrayal of reality. Okay, so the three kings, that's biblical. What more do we need to know? So anyway, and you may be, this kind of looks like a Christmas card. My ability to advance this is not going well. Anyway, when the picture comes up, you'll recognize it, and you'll see these three guys on camels walking through, trudging through the desert. And that's the common portrayal of the three kings, we three kings. And the common view is that you're talking about three kings, but that's not, that's, as we'll see as we go through the sermon today, that's not accurate. And so the three kings on the camels is not exactly what the Bible tells us, as we'll go through and we'll look at the subject. Also, if you look at, I can't advance this, so we'll have to find another way to do it. And there is a part of this that is, it will be important as we go through it when we're looking at a map. So there are the three kings, and you might go down to the fourth slide, which is important there, where it asks a question. And as you think about the song, are the words of the song biblically accurate? And is the image of the wise men accurate? Is that, I took it for granted, and maybe you did too, that that's exactly the way things were. But that's not the case, as we'll find out. So what we're going to do today is we're going to examine what the Bible tells us about the wise men from the east, because that's what they're designated in the Bible verse there in Matthew chapter 2. So we're going to look at the mystery of the wise men from the east. We're going to look at the mystery of the wise men from the east. And it is a mystery because the common portrayal is not accurate. So, and we'll look at a map here later on, because that will be important to a portion of what we're talking about today. So let's go to Matthew chapter 2, verse 1. Matthew chapter 2, verse 1. And we'll look at the first three verses in the book of Matthew. Matthew chapter 2, verses 1 through 3. There it says, "Now after Jesus was born in Bethlehem, in Judea, in the days of Herod the king, behold, wise men from the east came to Jerusalem. Wise men from the east came to Jerusalem, saying, 'Where is he who has been born king of the Jews? For we have seen his star.'" So his star, and we'll discuss the star in a little bit. "We've seen his star in the east and have come to worship him. When Herod the king heard this, he was troubled, and all Jerusalem with him." And as you look at this particular section of scripture, Matthew is the only gospel writer that records this particular passage. There are other gospel writers that talk about the birth of Christ, but only Matthew talks about this particular, looks at it in this particular way. As you look at Jerusalem at the time of Christ's birth, and you were looking at the city, 2,000 years ago, Jerusalem had a population of around 30,000. So it had a regular population of around 30,000, and during feast time, the population would double to around 60,000. Now, I've heard a higher number than that, but that's probably pretty accurate. So regularly, the city of Jerusalem was about 30,000, and during the feast, it ran up to about 60,000. It's interesting what takes place here in Jerusalem as a result of these men coming into the city. Our modern portrayal of Matthew chapter 2 is that these wise men from the east came at Christmas time to worship the Christ child. And another common portrayal, as we've seen, is that there were three of them. There were three of them. A question is this: if there were only three wise men, as we looked at the picture, remember, there were the three wise men on the camel. Okay, so they're trudging through the desert, and wherever they traveled from, wherever they came from, on to Jerusalem. You had three men on their camels or whatever they were riding on, and they're coming into the city. Think about it. You've got a city of 30,000 people. And you're probably always having people in caravans coming into the city. So here you have three guys on camels coming into the city. Why would people even notice them? Why would they notice just three men coming into the city? I mean, you got 30,000 people. That's a pretty small drop in the bucket there. And why would they be significant? So, and what's interesting here is these three wise men came into the city, and what happened as a result of them coming into the city? Well, it says that King Herod and all Jerusalem trembled. They were afraid when these three and whoever was accompanying them came into the city. So they were afraid based upon these three coming into the city. And so why were they afraid? Why were they afraid of three men coming into the city? And the point is, it was a bigger contingent than that. So they also, why would King Herod care about them? Why would he be interested in these three men at all? So he is the king, and he is ruling in Judea for the Romans. So the Romans have placed him in power, and he's consolidated his power, and he is the king over the Jews at the time. And he was always worried about maintaining his power, and here come these three men and whoever happened to come along with them, and he's very worried about that. It says he trembled, and the people in Jerusalem trembled. Now, why would they tremble? Were these bandits or what? So why would these three wise men be noted, and why would it be brought to the attention of King Herod, and why would he and the city tremble? Well, the Bible doesn't tell us the answer to that, but there is more to the story, which we'll be looking at as we go through the sermon. So how many wise men were there? The typical idea is that there were three. Well, the Bible doesn't tell us there were three. Why do we infer that there were three? Because of the gifts that they brought: gold, frankincense, and myrrh. So three gifts, three guys, three men, and that's the conclusion that people have come to. Other people have come to the conclusion that there might have been as many as 12. But that's a guess. It doesn't tell us. It doesn't tell us. But the clue that we get as to who these people were is because the whole city trembled. King Herod and the city trembled. Why was that? And we'll answer that. And they were coming into Jerusalem, and they were coming as representatives of a particular kingdom. They were coming as representatives of a particular kingdom, and the people of the Roman Empire feared this particular kingdom. They feared the kingdom. These were representatives of that kingdom, and these three men were accompanied by a small army. And we'll see why that was as we go through that. So, and why were they coming into Judea to worship the one who was born King of the Jews? These guys live east of Jerusalem in another kingdom. Who cares about what's going on in the Roman Empire and in the area of Judea? Why do they care about that? So we're going to look at this and seek to answer these questions, and I think you'll find it interesting. In fact, what we cover today is not going to cover the topic completely. So the title of this is The Wise Men from the East, Part 1. So what do the first two verses of Matthew tell us? And actually, they tell us more than you might think. First, the verses tell us that they came to Jerusalem in the days of Herod the king, and that would be Herod the Great. He was coming to the end of his reign and died fairly shortly after this event. So they came into the city, and Herod had been in the king from 37 BC. He ruled up until 4 BC, and during this time is when Jesus was born. The second thing that we might look at is they inquired where is he who has been born? They wanted to know where he was. Where could they find him? So they've been led to Jerusalem, and they've come to Herod, and they've asked about this. So Matthew doesn't tell us how old Christ was at the time, but they're looking for Jesus, and what does it tell us in Matthew chapter 2? It tells us he's not a baby, he's not an infant any longer. It tells us that he was a young child. In fact, it tells us that he was living with his mother and father in a house. He's not living in the barn or the place there with all the livestock. He's living in a house with his mother and father. And as I said, the common ideas of three wise men because of the gifts that they brought, and we'll discuss those as we go through. By the time the wise men from the east arrived, Christ wasn't an infant any longer, but as I said, he was a young child, and he was living in a house with his parent. A third question you could ask is based on Matthew 2, verses 1 through 2, indicate who these wise men were, generally speaking. So it reveals who they were in a general sense. And a fourth question that we could ask, or fourth point, is who would be interested in the birth of the Messiah? And who would want to be bringing him gifts? Who would be, you know, these people from the East, why would they be interested, and why would they be bringing him gifts? Would those interested in the Messiah more likely be Israelites or non-Israelites? Consider that. So were these just, you know, they're called magi. Were they pagan priests who were somehow God got their attention and brought them to Jerusalem? It's more likely, really, that they were descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, who at least had some familiarity with the scrolls and the prophecies concerning the birth of a Messiah. In fact, they probably had some idea about the 70 weeks prophecy, which is mentioned in Daniel chapter 9, verses 24 through 27, which we'll discuss in more detail in the Bible study next week. But they would have had some idea about that because it predicted when the Christ would be born. So that if they had some familiarity with that and were able to do the counting that is involved with that prophecy, they could get pretty close to the time when the Messiah would be born. So they would be expecting the Messiah to come. And they wouldn't be surprised that the Messiah had been born. You'd have to think that these wise men, whoever they were and however many there were, would have known about the prophecy which tells people when the Messiah would be born. So you can get a pretty good idea of when the Messiah would be born if you calculate it out and have a right understanding of what Daniel was looking at. So it's likely that these wise men had background as Israelites. They were Jews or they were people of Israel, and they had some idea about this. They had a familiarity with the scriptures. So these wise men were led by a star. Now we see it portrayed on Christmas cards and in various visions as this huge star. And you got to stop and think about that. There's no way that that could be a star. For instance, when we look at the star that is closest to our planet, we don't want to get too close to that star. It's some distant. Thankfully, God has placed it at 93 million miles from where we live. But if it was a little closer, things would be too hot for us to exist. If it was a little further, things would be frozen. So God places us at just the right distance where it's warm and yet not too warm, and it orbits in a way that allows it to cool off, and so it's the ideal place to put it. But it talks about it being his star. And so let's look at Matthew chapter 2, verse 9. It says, When they heard the king, they departed. And behold, the star which they had seen in the east went before them till it came and stood over where the young child was. So whatever this star was, they had followed it from their part of the world, and they had followed it to Jerusalem here, and the star continued to lead them to where they needed to go until it settled over the place where Jesus was at. And you know, and as I said, it can't be a star like our sun, just no way. So what kind of star was it? Well, in all likelihood, it was an angel. And as you look in the Bible refers to angels as stars. Angels are often referred to, as I said, stars in the Bible. And the angel mentioned here was assigned by God to lead the wise men to Judea, to the exact location where the young child was at. So the star led them to the exact location where the Messiah was. And so apparently Herod did not catch on soon enough to just follow them to where the baby was. And so Herod did not follow them, which would have been the easy solution to the problem, but that's not what he did. Let's look at a couple of other passages that talk about the role of angels. Matthew chapter 1, verse 20. Matthew chapter 1, verse 20. There it says, "But while he thought about these things, behold, an angel of the Lord appeared to him in a dream." And this is speaking of Joseph. "Saying, Joseph, son of David, do not be afraid to take to you Mary, your wife, for that which is conceived in her is of the Holy Spirit." So God told Mary she was going to bear the Christ child, and she handled it well, and her husband didn't know how to handle it, didn't understand exactly what was going on, and he was going to put her away quietly, but God intervened. And the angel relayed a message to him that everything was fine, that what was taking place with Mary was of God, and he should go ahead and take her as his wife. And it goes on to say here in the passage about Joseph, "And she will bring forth a son, and you shall call his name Jesus, for he will save his people from their sins." So this is pointing out that the Messiah was going to be born by Mary, that he was going to be the son of Joseph and Mary, even though Joseph was not actually his physical father. God was his father in a physical sense. Matthew chapter 1, verse 24. Going on a little further in chapter 1, it says, "Then Joseph, being roused from sleep, did as the angel of the Lord commanded him and took to him his wife. So he took Mary as his wife. They entered into marriage and lived together as husband and wife and raised Jesus in the years ahead. And let's go to Matthew chapter 2, verse 13 for one other scripture. Matthew chapter 2, verse 13. It says, "Now when they departed, behold, an angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream, saying, 'Arise, take the young child and his mother, flee to Egypt, and stay there until I bring you word, for Herod will seek the young child to destroy him.'" So Herod was intent on killing the Messiah because he was going to be King of Kings, and he was the king. And he did not want to give up his position, and he saw Christ as a threat. And so God said, look, you need to leave town until Herod dies, and then you can return, which God eventually revealed to them. Matthew chapter 2, verse 19, we see that revelation given to Joseph and Mary. Matthew chapter 2, verse 19. "Now when Herod was dead, behold, an angel of the Lord appeared in a dream to Joseph in Egypt, saying, 'Arise, take the young child and his mother and go to the land of Israel, for those who sought the young child's life are dead.'" So there was a threat to Christ to end his life prematurely. And so God told them to flee into Egypt and stay there until those who were threatening had died. And so they were dead, so Christ and his family could return to the land of Judea. So all the evidence is that his star is referring to an angel. And it is this angel that led these wise men from the east into Judea and into Jerusalem, and eventually led them directly to where Jesus was staying, in the house where he was staying with his mother and father. Now let's answer the question, what don't these two verses that we've looked at, Matthew chapter 2, verses 1 through 2, tell us about the wise men from the east? What don't these two verses tell us about the wise men from the east? First of all, they don't tell us how many there were. There's no place where it says there are three. So we don't know how many there were. And the idea that, as I said, there were three comes from the three gifts that these wise men brought and were going to present to the Christ child: gold, frankincense, and myrrh. Christ is somewhere at the time that they come on the scene between 1 and 2 years old. And if you remember back to the story about Herod desiring to kill all the children that potentially were a threat, well, I don't know which one it is, so I'm going to kill all of them between the ages of 2 and below. So he killed all of those children between that age. As I said, because there were three treasures, they thought there were three wise men. And as you look at verse 11, Matthew chapter 2, verse 11, it calls them the three items that they brought gifts. But if you look at them in the Greek, the word there isn't just gifts, it's treasures. They brought three treasures. And they weren't just gifts, they were treasures. They were worth a great deal of money. And they brought this as a tribute to the king. They brought it as a tribute to the king. It was, they were treasures signaling great wealth, a great deal of wealth, and they were giving this to the Christ child. And there's a reason for that, which we'll discuss next time. So why would these wise men from the east want to bestow wealth on this young child? Why would they want to bestow wealth on this young child? And it talks about the gold, frankincense, and myrrh. It was really a lot of wealth. It wasn't just a little bit of gold, a little bit of gold, a little bit of myrrh and frankincense. It was a substantial fortune worthy of a king. So these wise men came from the east, and where did they come from? Let's just look at one other picture, okay, and the map. All right, if you look at the map, you'll see, I think this is, if you look at the lighter colored area, that's the Parthian Empire. The lighter colored area is the Parthian Empire, and to the left, especially in the area of Judea and up into Asia Minor, that's all the Roman Empire. So to the east of the Roman Empire was an entire empire known as the Parthian Empire. Now, we don't know much about that because the Romans didn't want to share much information about that, and our history is primarily written from the winner's perspective, or in, as you'll see, the loser's perspective, and they didn't want to share that they had actually lost to this empire, which we'll talk about in a little bit. But this empire came into existence and was a rival to the Roman Empire. And so these wise men came into Judea and into Jerusalem from the Parthian Empire. And they had quite a journey to the land of Judea and the city of Jerusalem. And as they came, and you think about, they had to travel a good distance. And traveling at that time, if you were traveling, you didn't want to be traveling by yourself on the open road. The reason is because you were subject to robbers and thieves and thugs and attacks, so you didn't want to be traveling by yourself. So if you were traveling, you wanted to join up with a caravan so that you would have some protection. And these men coming from the Parthian Empire not only had protection, they brought along an army. You might think about Abraham. Abraham had his own army, remembered that? And he was attacked. If you look down, you might be able to see it. You can see the Euphrates River, which is the primary separation from the Roman Empire and the Parthian Empire. And Babylon was on the Euphrates River. And so that runs right along, pretty much along the edge of the lighter colored area between the dark area and the lighter covered area. And that area is where Babylon was. And that's an important thing to take note of. So they came from the area of Parthia, probably around Babylon. That was where the headquarters of the Parthian Empire was. And so they came with a caravan from there to the land of Judea. And so they had an army that went along with them. So here comes this Parthian army into Jerusalem, and knowing some of the history of what had transpired between Parthia and the Romans, you might be a little worried, especially if you were Herod. Okay, and we'll discuss why they would be somewhat worried about this, because the Romans never could defeat the Parthian Empire. They did not defeat them until almost the end of the Parthian Empire, which is hundreds of years away. So they would be traveling as a group with this army and these men, and we don't know how many there were that would be considered wise men, and they're traveling to the area of Judea in order to worship the king, the one called King of the Jews. So they show up in Jerusalem, and the people in Jerusalem, along with Herod, were trembling. Because here's this army, and what are they here for? They were worried, this could go wrong, and they could take up arms, they could attack us, and they were worried about that. But that's not what they were there for. So they had this small army that was going along with them because they had all this wealth with them, and they wanted to protect the wealth. They wanted to be protected from attack. And so these men from the Parthian Empire were coming to honor the king of the one who was the king of the Jews. So what you see here in Matthew chapter 2, verses 1 through 3, you really don't see the whole picture unless you have some historical background. So when the army rode into Jerusalem, it was of sufficient size to cause, as I said, Herod and the people of Jerusalem to tremble. They were worried that this was a threat to them. And then they found out these guys aren't here to attack us. They're here in order to worship the King of the Jews. So they were from the Parthian Empire. And if you look at the Parthian Empire existed almost as long as the Roman Empire did. But because we live, the predominant history is the Roman Empire. Parthians, who cares about them? We care about them because it helps us to understand more of the story of the Bible. Quoting from a book that was written by a man named Rawlinson, it was a book called A Manual of Ancient History, and I'll be reading from volume 2, page 276. So this is an old book written back in the 1860s. And it says, the Parthian Empire was one of the most powerful and considerable empires to ever exist. At its beginning, it was weak, as is common. It extended itself little by little over all Upper Asia. It made even the Romans tremble. Its duration is generally allowed to be 474 years, of which 254 were before Jesus Christ and 220 after Jesus Christ. And the Parthian Empire was located due east of the Roman Empire. If you look at what it says in Matthew chapter 2, it talks about these men from the east. And if you look at where Jerusalem is, you can see it on the map there. And if you look due east from that city, what's there? The Parthian Empire. So the Parthian Empire was there due east of the land of Israel, the land of Judea. And the Parthian Empire was about 1,000 miles north to south and about 2,000 miles east to west. And if you were to travel through the Parthian Empire, where would you end up? You would end up in China. So it was quite an extensive empire. And so when you look at these wise men who show up in Jerusalem, they are from Parthia. They traveled eastward from or westward from Parthia and came to the land of Judea. So as you look at the empire there on the western portion of that empire, you find Babylon. You find the word Mesopotamia there, and Babylon was there in that area of Mesopotamia. And a large portion of the border between the Roman Empire and Parthia was the Euphrates River. It separated the two empires. And the center of the Parthian Empire was due east of Jerusalem. And going due east from Jerusalem, you'll end up in Parthia, as I said. So the first two verses of Matthew tell us quite a great deal, and the only thing they don't tell us is why these men from the east were called wise men. We don't know why that was. And why would they want to worship the newborn King of the Jews? They're Parthians. Who cares? Why would they care? And why did Rome tremble at the thought of these Parthians entering Jerusalem? Why would the wise men and their army enter Jerusalem? And unfortunately, the people in Jerusalem and King Herod thought they were being invaded, and the Roman Empire was worried about the people of Parthia. And why were they trembling? Why were they worried about the Parthian Empire? Well, a little history will answer that. We have to go back to 53 BC. We have to go back to 53 BC, about 50 years before the birth of Christ. And what happened in 53 BC? In 53 BC, a Roman general by the name of Crassus set out to conquer Parthia. So the Romans saw Parthia as a rival, And the Romans were very conquest-minded because as they expanded their empire, then there could be more trade, which they controlled and would increase their wealth. So they saw Parthia as a lucrative conquest, and so they decided, we're going to conquer Parthia. So a fellow who was a fabulously wealthy in his own right by the name of Crassus, he became the individual who was overseeing the area of Judea and the area to the north of it, where you find the city of Damascus and that area. He was the Roman ruler in that area, and he decided to gather an army, which he financed a lot of it, and we're going to invade Parthia. And his goal was that they would conquer Parthia, and being Romans, they felt, this is going to be easy pie. We're going to conquer these guys, we're going to roll them, and it'll be part of the Roman Empire then. So he decides he's going to invade Parthia, and so he gathers his army. He gathers together 4,000 horse soldiers and as many light soldiers and archers. He had an army of about 40,000 men. And so they, to get over to the Parthian Empire, to cross the Euphrates River, they had to build a bridge. And the Romans were great bridge builders. I mean, if you go through Europe, you'll find all these bridges that were built by Roman soldiers throughout the time that they ruled in Europe. So no problem. We've got the engineers. We're Romans. We'll build a bridge over the Euphrates River and cross over and begin the conquest of the Parthian Empire. So they built it. They crossed over. And unfortunately, as they crossed over, the weather turned bad. So just as they're in the process of crossing over, a storm rolls in and caused a part of the bridge to collapse. Not all of it, but a portion of it. But the Romans got over to the eastern side. They regrouped. They rebuilt the bridge and got everything in order. And then they were going to move further into the Parthian Empire in order to begin their conquest. So, as you look at this beginning of the invasion of Parthia, it didn't start well. And you know, as you're looking at signs, I'm sure some of them saw this is not a good sign. And so I'm sure some of them were worried, but Crassus, look, minor setback, we're still going to roll these guys. So anyway, they moved on. Crassus and his army crossed the bridge, and they were undeterred and moved forward. So they're moving into Parthia, and they couldn't find any evidence of the Parthian army. But what happened was they sent out scouts, and the scouts are out, checking things out, and they come riding back into camp full tilt, indicating to Crassus and his army that the Parthians are coming, they're fully armed, and they're coming right now. So they come in, and basically the Parthian army is on them, and they hadn't been expecting that. So the Romans, no problem, they regrouped, they got ready, and the challenge for them was they were going to fight an army that, like they had never fought before. Because the tactics that the Parthians used, cavalry was a big part of it, and you had horse archers. And their bows and arrows were way beyond anything that the Romans were used to. So they start attacking the Romans. The Romans really can't mount much of a response, and the Parthians are just riding up and shooting Romans, and they're not able to do much in response. So the archers took their toll, and a lot of Romans did not survive. And as a result of the efforts by the Parthians, there was disorder and dismay. You know, it doesn't go like you're expecting. And so they're somewhat intimidated, and they've lost a lot of men. They're having difficulty fighting back against the Parthians. And what happened was that as the whole thing played out, they had lost about 40,000 soldiers by the time it was all done. They had lost 30,000 of their men, 10,000 captured, 20,000 killed. And so the Romans were just thinking, we need to go back to the other side of the river. And so they began falling back into their territory, realizing this is not going well. And eventually Crassus is killed in the process, and the Romans returned back to their side of the river. And if you look up this battle on the internet, it's called Carrhae, C-A-R-R-H-A-E, and it was the worst Roman loss in their history up to this point. So they lost a lot of soldiers, and they gave up the conquest of Parthia, and they went back across the river. Crassus didn't make it, and so they gave up on conquering Parthia for a while. But there was another Roman soldier by the name of Mark Antony. Mark Antony, he also wanted to conquer Parthia because he wanted to be emperor. And so he undertook an invasion with an even larger army into Parthia. And guess what? He lost too. So he lost and gave up on that and decided maybe I need to go to Egypt. So he ended up down in Egypt, and eventually he lost his life in Egypt along with his girlfriend Cleopatra. So he wanted to be Roman emperor, and for the people of Rome, this was a devastating loss. And they were never able to conquer Parthia. They wanted to, but they weren't able to do it. So they lost a large number of men. Another book talks about this, A History of Iran by Michael Fox Axworthy. On pages 36 and 37, he basically confirms what Rawlinson wrote about this and adds a few more details. In 53, it says, Marcus Crassus, a fabulously rich Roman politician who had destroyed the slave revolt of Spartacus, he became the new governor of Roman Syria, and hoping to make conquest to the east, Crassus marched an army of 40,000, as I said, east to Carrhae. And at Carrhae, Crassus' army was met in the open plain by a smaller but fast-moving force of about 10,000 horsemen. So you've got a 40,000-man Roman army, 10,000 Parthians. You would not expect that the Romans would be defeated, but that's exactly what happened. The Parthians confronted Crassus with a kind of fighting the Romans had not previously encountered, against which they had no answer. And hour after hour, arrows rained down on the Romans, and they were not able to mount an attack against the Parthians. And eventually Crassus sought to negotiate with the Romans, and there was some kind of scuffle that took place, and Crassus lost his life. So the Romans withdrew back to their territory. And the 10,000 Romans that were captured, they were taken on into the Parthian Empire, never to be seen or heard from again. So Rawlinson then makes this comment in his Ancient History on volume 2, page 284. Parthia, at this time, Rome was becoming respected and dreaded by all nations, and she was becoming mistress of the most important kingdoms of Europe, Asia, and Africa. Yet at the most exalted heights of her glory, she saw her glory suddenly fell to the ground in her attack upon a people formed out of the assemblage of an Eastern empire whose valor she despised. They felt the Romans are superior. As I said, we'll roll these people and we'll take them and control their territory. So complete victory was shown to these haughty conquerors of the world by a rival empire to the east who were able to defeat a much greater sized army. And The Romans never got over that, and they also realized maybe we should just leave them alone. And another reason we don't read much about Parthia in history books is, one, the Romans lost, so they're not going to publish, you know, the losers do not publish their losses. Okay, they don't usually do that. And the Romans definitely did not. Another reason we don't read much about Parthia in history is that because the people of Parthia were Jews and Israelites. Not all of them, but a fair number of them were descended from the people of Judah and the people of Israel. Now, so after the Battle of Carrhae, there was one additional Roman general, as I said, that sought to conquer, and that was Mark Antony. So why would you have Jews in the area of Parthia, Western Parthia? Why would you have Jews there? Okay, just so it's a rhetorical question, and the answer is this. As you look at Nebuchadnezzar, where was his capital? His capital was Babylon, okay? And he carted the Jews after their defeat off to his kingdom around Babylon. And the people took up residence there. And they began to spread out north, south, east, and west into the Parthian Empire and into the Roman Empire. So you have them all the way up into Asia Minor and into Parthia and in various parts of the land. So they were already dwelling there and had been for 500, you know, almost 500 years, because they had gone into captivity around 500 BC when Nebuchadnezzar carted them off, and they had been living there. And what did God tell them through Jeremiah? He said, live there, establish houses, businesses, begin your farms, and just carry on life. And they did. And when they were allowed to return to the land of Palestine, did everybody gather up and go back? No, they didn't. They had already, we're living here. Everything's, you know, our families are here, our businesses are here, and we're not going back. We're going to stay here. And they did. So you had these people that were already living there that were descended from Judah and who had preceded them in coming into that territory. You have the Assyrians, and the Assyrians had taken away the people of Israel, and they had also settled in the territory of Parthia. The area of the Assyrians, they lived up around the area of Armenia. You can see it at the top of the white part there, and in that area there, that was where the Assyrians were. And they had taken the people of Israel to that area. So they were already there. They were there before the people of Judah got there. So you had people that were descended from Israel and people that were descended from Judah that were living in the land. And if you go back to the time when the Jews were living in Babylon, was there communication between the Jews and the people of Judah living in Babylon? There most certainly was. You had, who was living there? I believe there was somebody named Daniel. You had Ezekiel. You had prophets living there, and they communicated back and forth. So they knew about these people living out there in Parthia. And so as you look at things historically, there's a very good reason why they would have known about this. And if they were if the prophets were working in Babylon where they were, communicating with them, you don't think they would have known of the prophecies, like the 70 weeks prophecy? Think about it. Daniel wrote that prophecy, and where was he living? He was living in Babylon. So you don't think that he shared that with the other people living there? Not only did the people in the land of Judea know about it, but they knew about it living in Babylon. So these people had some idea about these things, even if they did not perfectly follow them or know every detail. So they had some idea about these things. So as you look at the wise men coming from the east, you can see that they had some background in the scriptures and some background with their heritage. So as you look, and interestingly, as you look at the Roman history, eventually a man by the name of Octavian defeats all of the other people vying to be the Roman emperor. He becomes the Roman emperor. We know him as Augustus Caesar. And he comes into play in the time of Christ. Isn't he the one who commanded that there would be a census taken place? So Augustus Caesar, and what does Augustus Caesar do with Parthia? He establishes peace with them. And for 100 years after that peace is established, there's peace between Rome and Parthia. There's no attempt to conquer them, which is crucial to Christ being born, him carrying his message to the people of Judea. And then what happens after that? The church is founded. And what is the church going to do? The church has the responsibility to go to the world and carry the message to the world. So there's peace, which allows them to go into the Roman Empire, and not only the Roman Empire, but into Parthia as well. So just a few things we don't think about, because it's not common for us to review that with our perspective living where we live, which is more of a Roman perspective. But Parthia was on the scene, and Parthia was very influential in their time. So as you think about this, in what we've reviewed, hopefully it gives you a bit of a better understanding about the wise men from the east. They're not just three guys who decided to make a trip to Jerusalem. There was more to it than that. You know, God was intervening, and God allowed this angel to influence them and them to be aware of that prophecy that Daniel had given, and to be aware that in all that the Messiah had been born, the one born King of the Jews. They knew this. That's why they're coming west. So they're coming to Jerusalem for a very specific reason. And they brought this, all these treasures to honor this particular king. So we've reviewed some things that hopefully help you have a better understanding of the wise men from the east. But interestingly, there's a lot more to the story. For instance, who were these wise men specifically? Who were they? Why were they coming from Parthia to bestow wealth on one associated with the 70 weeks prophecy in Daniel? How did the Jews and Israelites who came there from Parthia get to Parthia in the first place? I think I gave you somewhat of an answer to that. Fourth point is, what kind of a structured government did Parthia have? And we'll discuss that next time. How did they select their kings? We'll discuss that. And who was their king? Who was their king? Did he have to be of a certain bloodline? And what title did he have? What line did he have to come from? And who was their king, and what title did he go by? It's a title we're all familiar with, and why did he go by that title? And does the title tie in to why they came to Jerusalem to worship him who is King of the Jews? And why were they so interested in that, and what was their ultimate goal? We'll answer all those questions next time. So we'll answer all those questions in part two of The Wise Men from the East. So if you're like me, you probably heard about We Three Kings of Orient Are, but did we really know the details? Hopefully you'll have more details. It's an interesting story that we don't always take a look at, and hopefully you'll find it valuable and We'll look forward to discussing it with you next week. So thanks for your attention, and please have a great remainder of the Sabbath day.